start with agenda item number one, which is report and possible discussion on quarterly activity report by John Ross, Chief Financial Officer. John?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is the standard sort of quarterly report. The format, we changed it just slightly. We have a Wells Fargo has a new representative. Fred Worley, who had been our representative, has left Wells Fargo and replaced by a gentleman named Barry Gunnels. Barry works out of Round Rock. He was unable to be here today. He had a prior business commitment that prevented him from being here today. He'll probably be here at the next meeting. But anyway, Barry prepares this particular summary, and it's really just a summary of the activity for the last quarter. You can see the number of participants in the top half. We actually added, I think it was three or four participants this particular quarter. Retirees, I mean, retirees we added. So we're up to 104 retirees receiving benefits on a monthly basis, and you can see the breakdown between the different payment options that they have. And then the rest of the employees, there are 360 total participants that have a vested benefit in this plan, including the retirees. So it's another 256 active or inactive vested employees that will someday get a benefit out of this defined benefit plan in addition to those retirees. So that's the number there. If you go down, you can see the activity. Again, this is for the quarters. You can see it's for the quarter ending November 30th, which is this plan, as you know, is on sort of a different cycle. It's similar to the BRA cycle, where the plan year actually ends February the 28th. It's a March 1st to February 28th plan year. So this is this is the third quarter, if you will, of the plan year. Anyway, you can see the market value went up nearly $800,000 for the quarter. You can see the breakdown of that, and that's what we sort of added to give a little bit more visibility as to what the change was for that period of time. And you can see the money coming in, the receipts, which primarily this was the quarter we make the contribution. We make an annual contribution based on the actuarial calculation of the plan, and we make that in September. So that's why you actually see the contribution line is $655,000. That was the contribution was required under the actuarial assumptions this last year, and so that contribution, but you'll just see that one time, one quarter a year, and it's this particular quarter. So you can see the dividend income and the unrealized gain loss and all that, and then the benefit payments to those 104 people, that's $403,000 for the quarter, a little over $100,000 a month in total benefit payments. And then you see the expenses that were paid in that particular quarter there. And there were some revenue rebates that were back to Wells Fargo and stuff there. So you can see the total change in the account balance went up $800,000 on a roughly $800,000 on a quarterly basis.
James, any questions? I'm just a sure. Army engineer.
Yeah.
Revenue rebates $2,200. What is
that? That is the. You know, I'm going to have to find. I don't want to misspeak. I'm not 100% certain. Let me get back before the end of the day. I will give you that information.
Wells Fargo.
It's from Wells Fargo, and it was a correction of some activity. But let me get that answer. No, I'll get this good question. I apologize for not knowing that exactly. But I will.
I understand
what that is. But I will get that answer for then before we leave today.
What we pay on the fees, how much of that is the basis point charge, and what is it?
Those are all, none of that is based on, well, the Wells Fargo, part of the Wells Fargo fees is based on the account balance. Part of their fee structure is based on their account balance. The Bogdan Group's fees is not based on account balance. It's a flat fee, and that's the quarterly amount for that. Gallagher Benefit, that's our actuary, and those are actually, they charge us for calculate retiree calculations when a retiree
there's like a service amount in there too. Yeah. They charge you for the actuarial calculation.
Yeah.
For each retiree,
the actuarial fee has been paid in another month, the actual annual actuarial thing, but they nevertheless when people retire, the actuary has to do a calculation of their retirement benefits and has to do a form and everything, and that's what those $400 is. That represents, I think, two of them. I think they're $200 a piece, so that actually represented two people in that particular quarter.
What percentage are we paying with, Barbara? Do you remember, is assets under management?
The
point something?
Yeah, it is, and I'll have to
Well, let's see, that's $28,000 a year, not a quarter.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
I can pull one of the bills and stuff.
Well, 7610 times 4 is 30,000 divided by, say, 19 million. Mm-hmm. It's about 15 basis points. That's a rough estimate. Mm-hmm.
Do they write the checks and everything? Or
yes.
In other words, they do all of the disbursements?
Yes.
And so forth.
Their work is, of course, cutting the retiree checks and then also, of course, the transactions, just processing the monetary transaction from an investment standpoint.
When we acquire the assets, do they charge us for a fee for that, or how do they account for that?
They charge us. There is a fee for the trades and things like that that they charge for that.
But that's not included in this number.
If there was, yes, it very well would be included in that number.
Oh.
It would be included in that number. I'll go get you. I don't have it right now, but I'll go get a copy of their last monthly bill or last two monthly bills and make y'all a copy. You can look at it. You can see.
Yeah.
What it is. They recently, the fees have actually gone down because of the defined contribution plan that we used to have had a lot of fees because those were record keeping fees stuff. Those have gone away, of course, now. So,
and I know this is a hard figure, but, and of course, I noticed the sign in the. So, are retirement numbers running about the same? In other words, are we retiring about the same number per year, as far as you can tell? Or
as far as people that are actually drawing retirement? I don't know. We probably. It sort of depends. It's sort of interesting, but there's a few people every.
Yeah, it goes. It's raised, but in the past couple months, it seems like we've had
a few.
Well, and that's really nice kind of question because it seemed like it accelerated a little bit over what had been occurring before, and I didn't know whether we were just having more people leave or what.
If we went back and looked at the last 2 years of this and saw those participants, when I first came here, the participants were a little over 90. So we've been between 90 and 100 in the last 3 or 4 years or so. So it had, we do add some, but then, of course, some people, we drop off. Some people pass away.
Well, we expect that number to go up, and the total
will
go down.
It will go up, sure. It will absolutely go up over time, certainly.
Yeah. But page 21 of the actuarial report, and as I confessed somewhat earlier, you got to be a real nerd to study this stuff.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I am. But if you look at that, it kind of shows you, it says projected schedule of benefit payments. But it doesn't really show you how many you're retiring. It just shows you the benefit payments going up.
Yes.
Because more and more retire. If you just want to have one number in your mind and work with it, just take the average age. The average age went from 50 to 51. So if it's 51, the peak is about 14 years out there, and then the number of retiring will start going down. But then you've got that many more out there. Eventually, with the when you have no new entrants, your average age just gets older and older and older.
Exactly.
It becomes, in essence, almost like you were investing for one person, and you were running their 401k, and they were 51 years old.
Yeah.
If you want to keep it really simple,
mm-hmm.
that may be oversimplifying it. Go ahead, we've interrupted.
No, that's fine. From a value, you'll notice, of course, on a net basis in this particular, of course, the contribution skewed it a little bit because this was the quarter we made the contribution. If you had not made the contribution, we would have, we would have had a net reduction in the. Well, not quite. I'm sorry, not quite a net reduction. It'd been a little bit of a gain, but not that much.
We had $505,000 gain and a $50,000 dividend income.
Right.
$550,000.
Right. You'd had only about $100,000 gain. If you think about it over time, at some point, you probably are going to have a little bit of a gain for a while, but at some point, the plan is going to reach its top, and it's going to, because you're going to have more people that are receiving benefits, and the plan is going to earn money, and it's going to do just what you expect, like a mortgage.
Go
it's going to go down. It's going to go down all the way down to zero. It'll sort of reach its,
yep.
Unless you have enormous investment performance or something that could, you know,
which you're planning on, right?
Which we're working toward. It will ultimately start decreasing.
I tell you, all the people that have taken money have also got survivorship or whatever, so they're not going to go away in a 10-year period or whatever.
Yeah. No.
We've got eight that have a 10-year certain life, so some of those will max out at 10, but the beneficiary, of course, same way.
Sure.
That's pretty much determinable. I mean, that's the, you know, you have two people out there and you're counting on them both dying at age 82. And that's the truth. It's something like that. Mm-hmm. One of them lives to 92. That's actuarial loss. The other one dies at 72. That's actuarial gain. They tend to offset each other. The hardest thing in this whole deal, and it's hard for us and for everyone that's in the defined benefit business, is that when you get on the liability side, a very small change in the interest rate at which you take your the present value of your liabilities makes a huge difference in your funding. I want to say it's something like a percent is equal to like 20% of your assets or something. Mm-hmm. We had a rule, or maybe it's 1.25% on the liability side. A wipe out 20% of asset growth.
Yeah.
You can really wipe out your funding ratio in a hurry. And right now we're taking it at a very, very low interest rate. And I guess the only good news is there is a limit to how low interest rates can go. You know? Yeah. And if we're not there now,
we're pretty close.
We're pretty close. I mean, how much lower can it get? But that's what's hurting us.
But you're talking about on a yield. Unless you want to take the treasuries.
No, I'm talking about taking the present value of, like, this person is 50. Our average person is 50. So we're going to start that person, his or her benefits, 14 years from now. The average is 51. And then we extrapolate that out to the average age at which they'll die. We take all those cash flows and we take the present value of all those cash flows. And the present value of anything goes up when interest rates are down because you have to have more money here in order to meet those cash flows. So when the interest rates go down, the present value of that liability goes up dramatically.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now. I shared with somebody before we were talking, because I gave this in a talk this past week. There's, of the S&P 500, 338 of them have defined benefit plans. Of those, 12 are fully funded. And the numbers are even worse when you look at entities that are GASB, you know, that are governmental entities. So, I mean, I guess misery loves company. But I do think that the actions that were taken last time go a long way. Because look at what we contributed, $655,000 versus $302,000 the year before.
Mm-hmm. And that the additional factor there is not... Is the idea of what this planned investment return is?
That's why we've got to
be careful not to let that gap widen because of the monetary policy like it's been, and rates and yields have been so low that it's really been a historical type yield environment. And
right.
When it stays low this long, it's harder to make it up because of the compounding effect. So,
exactly right. There's two things working against us. One, you have lower returns on your fixed income because interest rates are low, and then two, your liability gets jacked up so high.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Bill.
I was going to say the other thing on page 16, if you look at that, it shows where we're contributing more because, as he said, we're now assuming 6.5 instead of a higher rate.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the amortization period of the unfunded liability went down to 20 years. I think that was another good move on the part of the committee.
Too.
Did I see where government entities are going to have to start reporting liabilities just like an ERISA plan? What this all...
They're changing some GASB.
Their net asset values, if I may, their net asset values are going to go down because it's going to be a balance sheet liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. I thought I saw it. I just...
It's coming, yes.
It'll be a big deal.
It is.
So, in our particular case, how much will that be?
Well, our liability, we'll have to see when it happens. Of course, our liability may change between now and then. Our liability is several million dollars right now.
$7 million.
$7 million is our current liability right now. So, it'll depend.
Okay.
I didn't bring my actuarial.
So, that has to show up on our statement somewhere that we have that much unfunded liability.
Along with TCDRS.
It's currently in the...
Along with TCDRS.
Oh, okay.
other one.
It's currently disclosed. It's in there in the disclosure, but as far as it being on the statements, that's what will be new.
Right.
Well, right now, your unfunded is showing up as what the actuary is calculating versus the assumed return. And I think what Bill was talking about earlier is what's going to happen to the income statement and liabilities when it has to go to what's happening with current interest rates. And that has a huge impact. I mean, it really doesn't have an impact on what your ultimate liability is, because your ultimate liability is paying the benefits. And the actuary is trying to calculate that.
Right.
But the accountants are saying, okay, if we had a planned shutdown, what could you set, you know, what could you do on a snapshot? And that's based on current interest rates.
Right.
Which is scary.
It's not based at 6.5% either.
Current interest rate. How they measure the current interest rate?
Well, actually, they moved it into investment grade, where before they had only used government bonds. And the government bonds were so low. Oh my God!
Nobody would have a benefit.
Yeah. I mean, the liabilities were through the roof.
But we do have to recognize that, which is what Bill's pointing out. We have made a move towards that. We have had, thankfully, the cash to fund this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that making that move to be a little bit more aggressive than some, a lot of people have just flat ignored it, and a lot of these entities, and it takes a lot of courage to say, hey, we're going to put this money in now, because, you know, it's a lot easier to fund now when you have the money than it is to do it later when it's now 10 times more expensive.
Right. Well, the cities
with the frozen plans, you got two things that are working against you. Yeah. One is, you know, your average age is going up, but two is the fact that your amortization period is going to start shrinking as you move further into the program. And as that moves down, then your actuary is going to say, "Hey, we need a little more."
Yeah, there's an argument that we didn't.
Well, public entities, you know, fortunately ours is, it's not just a huge number and a huge plan, but I mean, public entities, and you see City of Fort Worth or various other cities that have had such big liability. I mean, their liabilities are enormous because they have so many employees, and it's a budgetary issue. I mean, those city councils sit there, they're already squeezed in their budgets, and they're saying, somebody comes up and says, well, you got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars more this year, and they say, well, we don't have hundreds, because none of them want to raise taxes. And on their citizens, so it's like it creates a big problem.
And they
end up kicking it down the can down the road, let the next city council order with
us. Exactly what he's talking about is the decision that we make, because instead of making the people that are receiving the goods and services from the fire department and the police pay for it at that time, they have actually deferred it to a later generation. That is analogous to pretty much everything we do here, but certainly to the retirement plan. If you amortize these costs too quickly and you recognize too much expense, well, then that's great. You know, you've got it all paid for ahead of time. I mean,
fully funded.
Yeah, you've got it. It's out there. But anyway, but what you've done is you have forced today's rate users to pay for something that tomorrow's rate users get the benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're really trying to do, is to balance the cash flow payments, which is how we recognize these in expense, so that we are being fair to future rate users and current rate users.
What are we, about 87% funded? Isn't that the number that I remember?
We're under that now. We're less than that. 70. We're under a 79. It's in the 70s. I didn't bring my actual report. I don't get it. But it's in the 70s. Now, the 6.5% change in 20 years dropped it. You know, in other words, it was better from a recognition, but it actually made it look like you're more poorly funded. You know,
that would be, in my opinion, irresponsible.
Right.
Right. We can't sit here year after year and say that it's going to be X when we've had a pattern of 0 to 25 monetary policy.
Right.
And there were no yield out of it.
We dropped it at 70 in the range.
There's an argument that we should do more.
I knew it had been
right.
But there's, if you charted it, the problem is when you get to that place where you have to stop and say, wait a minute, we can't pay this benefit, nobody wants to have that conversation.
Okay.
But that's what these cities and municipalities are soon going to be doing, because they're not going to be able to fund this promised benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to be feasible for them to do.
And it's, when it shows up in their financial statements, the people that buy their bonds are going to say, hey, wait a minute.
Now they're going to reconcile.
Politicians will not answer to the voters on this debt stuff. I don't care what you're talking about, Congress or the city council or whatever. But eventually they answer to the bondholders.
True.
Because nobody will buy your bonds, and they have to sell them in order to pay salaries.
Interesting enough, one of the new approaches in the last few years has been, I think, some of the public entities have actually issued tax-exempt debt to make to put money to actually put money into the thing. It's like, it's cheaper to do that.
They're arbitraging.
Makes
sense.
If they can take a 4% debt over here and go out and make 6.5%, in our case.
Exactly.
No, if you look on page 2 on the actuarial report, it went from 86 to 73. But it wasn't really the assets. The assets went down slightly because we paid out a lot. It wasn't because we didn't make money. Assets went down 2%, but the liability went up 15% because of the lower interest rate.
Lower interest rate, just like you were saying. With a lower rate, it makes the present value higher.
The value makes it higher.
The obligation appears to be higher.
How much lower can interest rates go? I don't know.
Not much. We hope not much.
But there is a limit.
You're at pay up that
place you money. That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a summary of the information for the quarter. I'll get the answer on that.
Any other questions on that?